The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Hello, and welcome to the American College of Osteopathic Internists Annual Convention and Scientific Sessions. This year's meeting was held in conjunction with the Annual Clinical Assembly of the American College of Osteopathic Surgeons. The meeting was held October 11th through 15th, 2017, and featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of interest to the practicing physician. The meeting was held at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. The program chair is Dr. Annette Caron, and the theme for this year's presentations is Goldilocks Medicine, Not Too Little, Not Too Much. Current Technologies in Insulin Pumps and Sensors is presented by Dr. Alan Shore.
The charge I was given, it was to talk about insulin pumps and glucose sensors, but in a different way I've decided to do it. It's called the Advances in Technology Treatment of Diabetes. Dr. Haenel is talking to you about my focus probably on type 1s, but when you talk about technology, it is for both type 1 and type 2. I've been in practice for approximately 31 years, and I've been doing this type of technology for 31 years, and even so for my fellowship. So if we go along, let me see here. How far have we come, how far are we going, and is there a final frontier? When we look at this, I preface what I'm about to say is that this talk has actually changed in the last 5 days because there's been additional data. And towards the middle part of the talk, I'll show you something that probably very few of you have ever seen. I'm going to show you a live shot of one of my patients, what their blood sugars are doing. So. My disclosures are there. As far as Medtronic Diabetes, I'm on the DSMB and CEC. As you can see, speakers bureaus, I do very little of that anymore. Research, I am involved with several research. Technology research, I'm kind of limited because of my activity as the Data Safety Monitoring Board. So the early insulin pumps, and for those of us who are old enough to remember the early insulin pumps, you can see that they were very simple, they weren't very complex, little or no variables. They really worked on a 24-hour basal rate, in other words, one or two. You would set your basal rate at 24 units per 24 hours, or 36 units per 24 hours. And if you look at the auto syringe section, as a fellow in 1984, my major tool of trade was the Phillips head screwdriver, in order to try and adjust these pumps. If you look down there, you saw way back in 1984, there were five or six pump companies within the United States. At that point, there was an article that came out stating that pump therapy was a significant risk for early death, particularly on a cardiovascular side. So the amount of pump companies dwindled down to one, and that was MiniMed. When they re-looked at that data, they found out that those people who died that they blamed on pump therapy, several were hit by a train, one committed suicide, several drowned, and therefore that kind of put the kibosh on it. However, pump therapy became less and less popular. When I started in 1986, I had about 20 patients on pumps, and I actually had 1/10 of the pump population in the United States. As we evolved over this, and you can see down the side there, we from 1964 to 2010, we had different pumps that have come into the United States. We had several companies that came in. You had Medtronic, you had Omnipod, you have the Roche system, you had Animas. I caution you that several of those companies are no longer in this country. So the newest technology, what is it now? What is on the horizon and what we have to look forward to. And the ultimate grail for people with diabetes, can the artificial pancreas, or what we designate in the endocrine world, AP, actually be achieved? And what are the limitations of the artificial pancreas? The Animas Vi Plus was the newest version. However, if you look onto the side there, as of October 5th, 2017, the company discontinued operations in the United States and Canada. Their assets have been acquired by Medtronic Diabetes. For me, it's a personal disappointment because I was the first medical advisor for Animas. I helped build the company, but as many people well know, when big companies buy big companies louse up little companies for a great period of time. So at that time, it had used the G5 technology. The problem with this particular company was the technology has not improved since 2006, 2007. And when you talk to your patients with diabetes in the pump world, it's what have you done for me lately? And what I mean by lately, what have you done for me yesterday? And the fact is the 200-unit cartridge was quite limited because most of our patients, and a lot of my patients who are on pumps, use upwards of 200 to 300 units a day. The Roche AccuCheck technology, again, now this pump's only available in Europe and Asia. Again, the company exited the U.S. market abruptly earlier this year and sold pump assets to Medtronic. You're now seeing a pattern of what's going on. It had Bluetooth technology. It was very popular in the U.K. and Germany. And it uses pre-filled syringes, which limited the type of insulin to be used. The reason I talk about that is that most pumps and most of your patients using pumps will use one of the rapid-acting insulins, including Novolog, Apidra, Humalog, now Fiasp, which is the fast-acting insulin. But many of us also place, as endocrinologists, place patients on U500 continuously. And it has its effect, particularly with type 2 patients, quite effective. The Omnipod DASH system is supposed to be available late this year, early next year. This is a patched pump. This will use Bluetooth technology. It would have the capability of using concentrated insulin. Basically, it is a PDM system. What you see there is the controller. The downside with that is it's only available for Android. Now, there's a change. Most people, everything's available for the iPhone. In this case, it's only available for the Android. So you're somewhat limited to your patients. Either that, you tell your patients to go out and get a second phone to be used. Oops. You're back. The Tandem PGL, this is another pump company. This is a Tandem PLG system. It uses the Dexcom system, which I'll show you later. Its launch possibility, if you look on there, you see that the patient can actually see their blood sugars both on their phone. That can be used either on Android or iPhone. And it can be also seen on the pump itself. The interesting thing about this particular pump is that it is a touch screen. So many of my young patients really like this because to them it's like working with an iPhone or working with one of the smartphones. They have ongoing clinical studies in 2017, but the launch probably will not come until early next year. Now, what's the difference between a predictive low glucose suspend versus a hybrid closed loop system? What happens with a predictive low glucose suspend, and what we mean by predictive is that you're wearing a sensor, and the body is predicting what's showing is that your blood sugar is starting to drop, and the pump and the sensor basically look at each other and say, we got a problem on our hands. And in the next 20 to 30 minutes, if we don't do anything, you will drop into hypoglycemic range. So what the sensor will do is target the pump and basically say to the pump, you've got to stop. So what will happen is the pump will suspend for a period of 15, 30, even upwards of 2 hours, particularly at night, and will alarm until your patient will have to do something about it. What happens with a hybrid closed loop system, and I'll show you the first hybrid closed loop system that's available, is that the sensor starts communicating fully with the pump and it learns that the patient's patterns. And what will happen is it will automatically lower or raise basal insulin, the amount of insulin given, in order to compensate for the blood sugar. Hybrid means that the patient still has to do meal boluses. They still have to calculate what they're going to eat and bolus. It also means that if their blood sugar is high, the pump will trend out of a closed-loop system, what we call into open loop, and that the patient will have to correct again, and once the blood sugar comes down, they can switch back to what we call auto mode or closed-loop system. This is the next step. But again, it still requires patient participation. This is not a true artificial pancreas. If there was a true artificial pancreas, Dr. Hanel and the rest of us endocrinologists will go, in my particular case, I'll go work for my son's computer company. So, a hybrid closed loop system is to be a collaborative effort right now with the tandem system with what's called Dexcom, and then what we call type zero technology. The problem with closed loop systems is that the FDA only approves one algorithm. Why they do that, I have no idea. But every patient's different. So we have to come up with a kind of an algorithm range. So this is where we're at right now. It'll be using a G6 technology, and their launch for their hybrid closed loop system will be 2019. This is the one that's available for your patients right now. This is the Medtronic 670G. And interesting enough, folks, this is the first pump in 20 years that's been approved in the United States before it was approved in Europe. How that happened, I can't explain it. I think somebody at the FDA was absent that week. But it's the first available system. It's approved. It's ongoing trials right now. Medtronic is now testing it in children as young as 2 and adolescents. So what happens is it looks similar to what you're using right now with sensor or a low glucose suspend. You have a sensor which goes on one side, which has a transmitter. You have a pump. That this is not an implantable system. That's a whole different ball game. You have the infusion site, and then you have the pump sitting there. And if you look on the side of the colored part of the pump, you'll see a shield. That's your blood sugar. The fact that you're on the shield means you're now in closed-loop technology, or what we call auto mode. So basically, what we have is the pump, which has a new algorithm in it. This one is the Guardian sensor, a Guardian Link 3 transmitter, and a meter. The transmitter basically is a brand new one, increased accuracy, whereas most transmitters and most sensors used to only go 3 to 4 days. You now can go 7 days, which means my patients will push it out to about 10 days. So you have automation. Previously, you had that one set where it says suspend on low. That was low glucose suspend. That's called LGS. Now you have predictive low glucose suspend, which is suspend before low, and now you've moved into the area what we call auto mode. It means that the basal insulin's adjusted depending on what the blood sugar shows. And the basal insulin is that insulin which you guys would consider the background insulin. If you are going to do it with injections, it's either Tresiba or Lantus. I stopped using Levemir about 10 years ago, or when it even came out. To me, it's a glorified MPH, but that's my opinion. So the basal rate is what your body is normally producing when you're not eating. We set a target of 120 primarily because that's the standard target that we have to set. We can make a temporary target of 150, particularly if some people are prone to possible hypoglycemia. And then you have your algorithm and you have your meal bolus. So the evidence was the first hybrid closed loop trial that allowed this to happen. It was a single arm, non-randomized, type 1, greater than 2 years, A1Cs less than 10, adolescents 14 to 21, adults 22 to 75. Yes, folks, there are people who, I just had a 70-year-old that just applied for a pump because she's got tired of giving injections, so she'll start it. He had 10 sites, 9 in the U.S., 1 in Israel, pump therapy greater than 6 months, and you can see the protocol where they run in a period and a study period of 3 months in auto mode. This is the background of it, the average age, the years, the weight, BMI, duration of diabetes, and the total daily use of insulin and A1C. And what you can see here is with all patients, the median adolescents, and obviously that the adolescents, our blood sugars are a little higher, not to be not quite understanding given their lifestyle and given what's going on. But what happened with the takeaway from this is in the auto mode system, and I've seen this with my patients that have switched from conventional pump therapy to auto mode, is that you're more time in range. There's less variability. And when you have less variability, these patients feel better. Many of them have turned around and said, why didn't we have this earlier? There is responsibility that comes with this system. These patients must upload every 2 weeks to the care link, which allows me or my nurse practitioner to come in and look at that data. It is an absolute imperative that they do this. So you can see beyond the A1C, we're trying to go make sure that we can keep the variability within range. The idea of A1C, if they've talked about this before, you can have somebody with an A1C of 6.5 and their blood sugars are ranging anywhere from 34 to 300, and they're constantly going up and down, up and down, and you can have an A1C of 6.5 and they're quite well within range. Which one would you prefer to be? And you can see well within range there. This is run-in time, study time in range 72.2 and 75.3. This was the pivotal study. So far on the additional studies, we're finding that the patients are approximately 80 to 85% within range. And less hypoglycemia. And then A1C lowering across the board. I'll just go quickly through this. The endpoints, you can see the adolescents. And the safety, hypoglycemia was minimal, DKA was minimal. Most of the issues were mechanical, and that's been working it. As you well know, these are devices, and devices fail at times. So the study strength was a multi-center study and a large number of subjects. The system was used 24 hours a day, and the accuracy of this new sensor was confirmed. The limitations are the single-arm non-randomized, exclusion of subjects of greater than 10%, and must be interpreted with caution. Some people are different than those individual results out in the real world are different than those in a trial. There are ongoing trials with utilizing the 670. Medtronic right now has approximately 3 to 4 trials running at both worldwide. So. Now, what's the issue with AP systems? The algorithm is not customizable. I don't know two patients with diabetes that have the same needs. The problem right now also is you need to utilize 2 separate devices on the body. There's no combined catheter or sensor at present, which most patients would like. However, it's being developed. Any of your patients who want a combined catheter, they can move to Denmark, and they're welcome to get that. Sensor may last only 5 to 7 days, catheters lasting only 3 to 4 days, so they got to combine these things. And the other thing that happens with these patients is they're so used to micromanaging their diabetes that when we put them on an AP system, they have to stop marking, looking at the numbers and constantly correcting and allow the system to do what it's supposed to do. The other question is, will individuals continuously wear the system? The government regulations may slow progress of advances. And the question is, do we need a dual hormone system? Do we add glucagon to the system? We'll talk about it in a little bit later. I've done some work on my own with using, for type 2 patients, what we call double pump systems, continuous insulin and continuous pramlintide or Semlin. So, there are individuals that what we call open artificial pancreas system, do it yourself. I caution this is not approved by or sanctioned by the FDA or other regulatory agencies. Open source community of individuals, these are guys that are doing it on their own. Requires a modicum of technical acumen to implement. Still requires patient involvement with meal bolus and correction. Additional upgrades are being released frequently. uses older insulin pumps because the pump companies caught on to this and locked their systems. And work is proceeding to facilitate a newer pump technology. Obviously, when you got computer people around, and my son being a computer engineer, he says they hack things all the time. And the utility with hybrid closed-loop systems now available, different from more individualized algorithms. So there are people that want to go ahead and do this. These are some of the websites that you can try and work with. There's last one is an article that talks about do-it-yourself. That should be on the slides that are available to you. Now, OpenAPS example. You guys want to pull that for me? Right now, this is one of my patients, and this is his numbers, as you can see right here. If what you see on the end there is what a predictive system, whether it goes up or down, looking at what's happening. This is a live shot of what's going on. So right now, 4:46 p.m., his blood sugar is 210. That arrow states that he's pretty stable. If you look down on the bottom there, that's what his blood sugars have been throughout the day. And if with his permission, I'm able to do this. I don't know how many people, I have about two or three of these patients that are doing this right now, and these things come up on my computer on a regular basis. Okay. We're going to move on. Again, with pump therapy, what I say today may not be what I tell you tomorrow. And I'm quickly going through this because I was limited to about 25 minutes, so I'm trying to get everything done. We're going to go CGM, or continuous glucose monitoring. There's several available. One is a Dexcom, which is the most common one that's available. The G4 system is integrated several pumps. The G5 system, you can use Bluetooth technology and go through your phone. G6 system will be able to be utilized 10 days, whereas the G4 was 5 days, the G5 was 7 days. The Medtronic, you now have Guardian, Enlight, and the integrated systems for hybrid closed loop. And the one on the bottom is Freestyle Libre, which we'll show you. There's a professional one, which we use in our office, which is blinded. And the personal was just approved by the FDA approximately 4 days ago. This is the Freestyle Libre system. The professional system, which is what I use, is a small, you see that disc we put on in the office. The patient walks around for 2 weeks, comes back, we download the data, we analyze the data. It is not real time. It is an analysis of the past 2 weeks. The personal system was just approved. It will be called the Freestyle Libre or the Freestyle Flash. It will be available for your patients in the pharmacy December 2nd. And this is purely a pharmacy item. This is not something that has to go through major approval like the durable medical equipment. This is like buying a glucometer. And these are the reports that you will get from the Libre system. Now, if you look at that daily pattern there, that happened to be, you can see that the hemoglobin A1C, well, looks pretty good at 7.8, but what's the issue? There's a lot of variability there. That patient's going up and down, up and down, up and down. And for that 7.8, if we did not have this system, somebody might say, for a 65-year-old, that's not so bad. But when you look at this, the patient looks at it and says, oh my God, no wonder I'm not feeling well. So it allows us to make some individualized changes. Additional reports are available. You can customize it the way you wish. That's the G5 system. It actually works on the phone or on the watch. And if you have it on, I have patients have it on a watch, and if you think you're looking at your time all the time, that's not what they're doing. They're looking at the blood sugar. Now, what's coming on the European side, coming to North America? This is a patch pump, what we call the Juul. It's called the Biotech. It's a Swiss-based company. It's once part of the Animas Corporation. It was jettisoned by J&J in 2006. It's a 500-unit capacity for type 1 patients. It's an 800-unit capacity for type 2 patients. And so it is run by a controller or off your phone. And what's called MEMS technology, something a little different, micro electronic mechanical system, which looks just like that. That's the brains to it. It was coined first in 1986, and miniaturized pump technology to increase volume and may be the first step to fully integrated internal closed-loop system. And in closed-loop systems internally, our feasibility is questionable at this point. Also coming is a one called Cell Novo, which is UK, Italy, and France. It's small, waterproof, rechargeable. There's no buttons on the pump. It's similar to Omnipod. It needs a controller. The problem with Omnipod, the problem with something like a patch pump, is if you lose the controller, you're done. You got to replace everything. And I've had patients that have lost their controller and not even known where they were. So all those pods are worthless to them. They have to be replaced. This one only has a 150-unit capacity and needs to be replaced every 3 days. For algorithms at this point, this is hard to see, but Dr. Rodbard, who's a friend of mine, basically treatment algorithms may need to consider multi-hormonal systems. For those who think that diabetes is just type 1 and even type 2, we talked about the complexity. The treatment with pump therapy or continuous insulin is much more complex than we think. It's not just insulin. The dual system might have to contain glucagon. Maybe we have to do multi-hormonal. Maybe we have to do glucagon and pramlintide. Maybe we have to do glucagon, pramlintide, somatostatin, and something else. So it becomes more complex. So we're looking at future directions, multi-hormonal systems, similar or pramlintide, somatostatin. We have a faster-acting insulin right now, but pump indication pending. We have a company that's doing combination insulin with other hormones that we could use in the pump. They're trying to get that there. It's a French company called Adocia. We're going to look at remote control systems. And again, could complete closed-loop systems, can this be ever achieved? There's a physician in Montpellier in France that has been working with the implantable pump system, and he's kind of worked it out where it can work on a fairly good basis. The problem is most patients cannot tolerate this system being in them for more than 18 months. So as you can see, I've quickly gone over what's available, but I'm also going to tell you that there's more coming down the line. And the key for all this, and I can go over all the data, I can go over all the new things, is the patient participation. And the key to patient participation with pumps or sensors is education. My nurse practitioner and my pump trainer spend upwards of 16 hours training each and every one of these patients, and we constantly are in contact with them. The more that patient feels that they have backup, the more successful you're going to be. And the more that the patient feels that they're getting something out of it, the more successful you're going to be. Most of my pump patients, and I have over 400 of them, are doing quite well, and no one likes to go off a pump. I've had several patients that say, well, I'm gonna go on vacation, can I take a pump holiday? I said, fine, but take your pump with you and see what happens. And about 3 days into doing shots, they call me and said, what were the settings? I'm going back. So we're trying to make it to that direction, and hopefully we'll make it through this. I know I did a lot of quickly go through everything, but my time was kind of limited, and everybody wants to get to wherever they're getting to. But I appreciate the opportunity. If there's any questions, I will take that. With the slides, my contact information should be on there. You're welcome to send me a contact. I'll be glad to share anything I have. Thank you.
So we'll be happy to take questions. If you guys want to come to the microphones, we'll be... I can hear you, but not through the microphone.
Quick question.
So the first question was about giving calcium therapy in patients that are having GERD difficulties. And I think the issue with GERD management continues to evolve. The answer is I'm not really sure. I think we've probably done many of our patients a disservice with all the PPIs that we've used. I think there's concerns about what impact that has on the microbiome, what protective effects the acid milieu has to lessen some of the aspiration issues. So I think we continue to evolve and not know the answer. I don't have a big concern that when I get patients on calcium-based supplements that I'm having a significant impact on their gastric, you know, pH, so to speak. Okay, I didn't know what you were asking. So that's a potential issue. So does it have an impact? And so that's part of the evolving. We don't know where the exact calcium level should be. How many milligrams should we be offering these patients? And do the PPIs affect the acid environment? Does that affect the absorption issue? I think is another question that we just don't have a smart answer to. So I don't have a good answer for that. Your other question was related to thyroid, and we have patients that have levothyroxine replacement, they have low TSH, normal T4, T3, so they have subclinical hyperthyroidism. So yeah, you're increasing their metabolic bone risk. And the studies are supporting, and certainly in my practice I view that as well, is that you are increasing their risk of osteopenia and osteoporosis. Does it impact my practice? It depends on your patient. If they're 32 and they're those patients that feel better and they're gonna argue with you that they have to be on more aggressive therapy, then I yield. If they're 68 and I have the concerns and they have the osteoporosis and the Dowager's hump, and then I'm less apt to keep them there. So. Yes, sir.
A little bit.
I don't think that's on, so just speak loudly.
I can see the question was about the studies that are dealing with closed loop and concern with safety. I'm going to have to dance around it because I know different data there. The answer is no, I am not concerned about safety because I am actually seeing what's going on and that there's a great deal of lengths taken to look at the safety of these things. And that everybody who's doing these trials has a data safety monitoring board with them. And it's a combination of both pediatric and adult endocrinologists. And in my case, we meet every 4 to 5 weeks to go over all the adverse events. And by doing so, we make the decision whether those within the safety, whether those trials will continue. The problem with device trials is that the FDA looks at it at the way they do these things much differently than if you had a pharmaceutical trial. Devices are considered, if I went back to my role as chairman of the IRB for the last 15 years, I would show you what the FDA looks at device trials. They're a much different design than the others.